Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Hey folks, welcome into Onto Waveland, presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. We are the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor, joined by Patrick Mooney and Sahadev Sharma. You know what? I was just thinking about it. So is one of you on the road for this series out in San Francisco?
I am, Brett.
Okay. I didn't want to say, but like I noticed you had like what appears to be a pretty swanky set up behind you. I was like, is that the hotel room? That's not bad.
Athletic's hooking you up. Like my kids, like Blackhawks pennant and like random Star Wars and G.I. Joe superhero stuff in the background.
You don't travel with your G.I. Joes?
I definitely dated myself with the G.I. Joes reference there. It is still early out here on the West Coast.
So. Oh, that's true. Yeah. Okay, so obviously the Cubs are in San Francisco. They have started the West Coast road trip that, I mean, I wouldn't say this is the start of the rough stretch. We had been pegging that to the Padres series that was at Wrigley Field when we last spoke with you folks. The Cubs were in the midst of it, which turned out to be a sweep, not too shabby. But now they hit the road, and you know, we know this every year. It almost doesn't matter what team you are playing or how good your team is. When you do that first West Coast road swing, it just is always rough. I mean, I think that body adjustment for players, the timing, you're just a little bit out of whack. And for the Cubs, this is their first West Coast road trip in almost 2 years. So that is not to say the loss last night is excusable by virtue of the travel alone. The Giants are good and Cubs just had an off night in every phase of the game, whatever it happens. But I think the point there mostly is in these seven games against the Giants and Padres, if the Cubs came out of it at 3-4, you'd be like, oh yeah, that is fine. That is a totally acceptable outcome. Did you guys have anything in particular you wanted to comment on about last night's game? Because I think the thing that we want to get into today is a little bit broader than that. So, I mean, I didn't have a ton. Like I said, my take on it was, you know, Zach Davies, just a lot of traffic, a few pitches up, Giants were on him, bullpen was using some of their lower leverage guys who just didn't quite come through in those spots, and defense
how dare you call Rex Brothers a lower leverage guy?
Well, and Sahadev will not stand for that.
You're right. That was a grievous sin. I'm sorry. You know, I know that that's a personal affront to you. I like how, by the way, as Brothers has gotten used a little bit less and his performance has waned a little bit, I've acted as though I'm like, oh, that's the Sahadev's guy. You know, I never said anything. Yeah, positive
Brett never said
Brothers.
Anything.
And that was, of course, that was as high as the leverage gets in the middle innings there when he came in and gave up the home.
I don't love him coming on in with men on base. That's just my general feeling.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's
not a messy innings guy. I mean, no, I know he's a lefty and you want to match up, but it does feel like.
My general thought that was Davies. It was clear Davies was off earlier than that, and I'm surprised Ross stuck with him as long as he did. I generally don't criticize Ross's decision making there because I feel like he's had a really good pulse on it. So maybe there's something he saw. Like Patrick said, he's the one out there and he's paying more attention. It was a West Coast game, and once it got out of hand, once that 3-run homer happened, I was like, okay, I don't really need to pay attention to this much more. I'll let Patrick handle it. And I think I started watching some reality TV. Just really disengage, really disengage the brain.
Like I thought you were gonna say, oh, I started watching some NBA playoffs. Or...
No. There's some reality TV with Indian families that I discovered because MLB TV has all these new commercials and it's some Indian drama. And I was like, well, I don't watch reality TV, but I gotta see what the Indian people are doing.
Can we Sorry, can we clarify just for listeners who might not be aware that you know, Tsarev is, he's remarking upon a culture upon which he is a part, right?
Like, yeah.
Because otherwise, out of context, you know.
There's a fly ball by Castellanos.
I was going to say, I didn't want someone to have to, this isn't a Brenly situation where, I mean, again, I don't want to make any assumptions, but you know, Sahadev's name is Sahadev Sharma, so maybe those dots.
These are my people. They're a lot wealthier than I am, and better looking than I am. But
well, come on now.
Those
buddy.
Are the only real differences.
Oh no, come on. all right, I think we were talking about baseball at some point recent past. Mooney, did you want to drop any thoughts on the Giants game in particular? Or I mean,
no. Or if you're
watching
into...
some Indian reality TV dramas, I don't want to foreclose that possibility that you've got something interesting to say on that.
No, I thought our producer Michael Beller had a really good idea of what we could get into today. Teeing you up on that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that it's, you know, we were talking before we started recording that. It's something, on the one hand, maybe it's a little early to talk about it, but I don't know how long we're going to have this as an option to really dig into. So I'm glad we're going to get into it. And it's this idea that, okay, the Cubs are, on a results basis, certainly better than where we thought they would be in early June. And I think that Jed Hoyer's remarks last week about... or maybe it was earlier this week, but that the team was in a better financial place than they maybe thought they would be in early June. So you pair those two things together and you suddenly start to think, oh, maybe this version of a trade season that we've had in our minds, which was either massive sell-off or just ride it out and see what happens. Maybe there's a realistic third option there, and it's that the Cubs become acquirers and maybe even significant acquirers if the team is looking good enough, if the options out there in trade are attractive enough, maybe we should at least touch on, oh, what could the Cubs do? And where could they supplement? Where could they seek out trade targets? And so, yeah, I love this as a topic. And maybe I'll leave it open-ended for you to kick things off, Sadev. Or Mooney. Sorry. You know what? No, I'm going to throw it to Mooney. He set this up. He transitioned us. I'm going to set him up first for how he wants to dig into this. And then I've got some thoughts too. But like I said, we like this as a topic because we don't know how long we're going to have to talk about this side of things.
Well, I think I'll leave the Scherzer stuff for you guys, but I do think there's definitely a realistic, reasonable case to be made that as Wrigley Field gets open to 100% capacity, and as long as this team keeps performing at a not even like a high level, just remains competitive, they've built up enough of a cushion that I do think you get to the all. Obviously, these plans would start before the All-Star break, but you can start seeing, okay, who's healthy, who's not. You know, what do we need? Where could things go wrong in the second half? And that's what, you know, Jed and Theo had done for years. I mean, obviously, whether it was Castellanos or Aroldis Chapman, like, there were some really big deals they made. But, you know, they loved getting the, you know, every year was a Quinton Berry or an Austin Jackson or, you know, another kind of reliable middle innings reliever. And I think if you look at this rotation, I think you'll see what you'll get out of June. But if you look, I don't know, what if the Nationals are out of it and there's someone like John Lester is available and like a guy that you would trust in a big game in September and it only costs you whatever, $2 million, you do that, right? I mean, as teams there, if you kind of look at the state of the division, I mean, the Cardinals pitching staff is pretty decimated right now as well. I think the Reds and Pirates, you can kind of cross off. And the Brewers always seem to kind of maximize what they have. I certainly wouldn't write them off. But I think there are, you know, ways for the front office to do their job and, you know, make this team better for the second half. And that doesn't mean giving up your best prospects. It doesn't mean only, you know, blockbuster deals, but you know, they've shown that they're good at this aspect, at least this year, of all these depth guys we never heard of coming up and contributing. Just do more of that without touching the best pieces of your farm system and spend ownership's money. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that I think the fact that things have opened up quicker than they really expected, and there's more fans in the stands already. And did we get confirmation from the Cubs that it's 100%? It is. Okay, I just wanted to make sure, because I saw a bunch of like
next Friday. Okay, that's that series against the Cardinals.
That's what I thought. I just wasn't sure if it was officially official. Which, I mean, that's great. That's 100% capacity. They're going to be raking in the money now. This is, you know, there's no excuses. Projections look good. I would say that, you know, the Cubs are one of the teams that benefit most from this, right? People, they're in a city where there's a lot of vaccinated people that love to enjoy this city and its weather during the summer. We get a brief period of beautiful weather, and it just so happens to be when the Cubs are playing baseball, right? So, I mean, it's a tourist attraction, all that stuff. So there's going to be money. I would say that if this continues, I don't know how you don't add to the team. I know it's really hard. I think for me, the biggest thing is how difficult it is to kind of, how do you push in when you know that three key players are free agents, right? Rizzo, Baez, and KB. Like, what type of assurances or confidence do you need to have that you can add, bring back one or two of them at least, right? Do you want to start pushing in when you... It's just a really... It's a difficult situation to be in as far as a front office member. For fans and us and stuff like that, yes, it's easy to say push in, and I agree, they should. But it's just, I would not want to be Jed Hoyer right now to try and figure out to try and toe that line of, yeah, I want to win another World Series. And this team is starting to make me think that they're not as bad as we once thought. They're certainly not as bad as we thought. And are they better than we thought? If they keep playing like this, and they really, if they come through June and they're still competitive, that for me tells a lot about this team. It's really hard to win on the road against good teams. We don't know how teams are reacting to it now, how their bodies are reacting to these things. I don't know who makes sense. Like, I agree that, yeah, some small moves wouldn't be hard for them to pull off. But really, we know what they need, right? They need that front of the rotation guy that they traded away already. I just don't know how that looks, how you make that work if you're going to pursue that front of the rotation guy. Because it just it almost feels like you're owning up to a mistake. But it's also, there was a reason that was made, right? The farm system does need more depth. There are issues with the farm, and you have to think about the future at some point. So how do you balance those two ideas at this trade deadline? I think it's going to be a fascinating topic as we get closer to that moment.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
What's tricky is that I think you could frame an argument that the fact that there are guys on expiring deals who are going to be walking after the season is a reason to push in, right? Because it's the last year that you've got. So it's like, oh my God, max it out. But I also agree with what you were implying, which is that if you are going to lose all of these guys, it makes you not want to have a sell-off. I genuinely believe that it's not that the Cubs want to have a sell-off. It's that if everybody's going to leave, and if we aren't going to make a substantial run in the postseason, then it would be even more defeating not to make sell trades in July. And I think that that's why I was doing a radio hit last night, and it kind of dawned on me that actually what really informs this conversation right now in a lot of ways has nothing to do with the competitiveness of the team, what's available in the trade market, any of that stuff. It's, you know what I'm doing first if I'm Jed? I am really, really, really trying to nail down whether I think I could extend any of these guys and whether and or whether I can feel good about my chances to re-sign them in the offseason. Because if I do feel good about those things, then my calculus about how good the team needs to be for me to buy is probably changed dramatically. I'm probably way more willing to buy and maybe even buy aggressively in July if I feel like we're close enough, you know, a couple of games back, maybe whatever. I'm ready to buy aggressively if I feel like, well, I'm still going to have some of these guys next year. And so that's the tricky thing. And I think you're spot on right, Sadiv, that, and well, let me take both of your guys' points. I think adding a John Lester type is going to be eminently doable. I think financially it's going to be, I think it's very clear. Like there was no hedging from Hoyer. I think we know that the money's being turned back on a lot faster than people thought. We know that payroll was way down this year in anticipation of there not being money. So like there's money. I don't think there's any question. I know that the very cynical Cubs fans like to rebut that, but I think there's going to be money. I think the question is, are you going to want to give up any substantial prospects for a run with this team? And the issue there is you can add a John Lester type with minimal prospect return. You take on the salary, you deal one of the many exploding arms down on the farm system that you've got questions about, fine, great. But does that make an appreciable difference for what we believe this Cubs team can do late in the year and into the postseason? And I know that a million things can happen that can derail your best laid plans. But if you're looking at this team now, I feel like there's only one thing that it actually needs. Like there's one target area that is so obvious that they need to be able to be in position to make a deep run. And that's an impact starting pitcher at the front of the rotation. Bullpen, it's great. It's got every piece that you need. It has tremendous depth behind it. I just don't see the need to make a dramatic addition there. Positionally, I think we're seeing that there's more depth than we thought. And obviously injuries can always change that calculus, but you know, where's the spot where you're adding an impact starter on the positional side? I don't see what it is. And so really, it leaves the rotation. And it isn't just that it's the rotation by default. It's the rotation because it's like, who's that guy who's going to go into a postseason start and give you 7 or 8 dominant innings? You know, like, who is that guy? I don't see who it is. Maybe Kyle Hendricks does it because we know he can. But outside of him, the rotation is like built on guys who only do give you 5 innings. And so that's what makes me nervous about thinking, oh, this is a group that can make a run deep without making a big trade. And so, you know, I've started the process of like putting out content that alludes to Max Scherzer. And it's like half joking. It's sort of knowingly poking at the biggest name who addresses the biggest need, who's a rental type, who's going to be traded. That doesn't mean that I think the Cubs are going to go after Max Scherzer. He's probably going to command a return in trade, even as a rental, that I'm not even sure the Cubs could meet what the highest bidder is going to be. You know, if there's a team out there that's willing to give up a tip-top impact prospect the way the Cubs were when they traded for Aroldis Chapman, I don't think the Cubs can beat that offer. And then even if they could, I don't know that they would want to. So I will, you know, I'm going to keep poking the bear when it comes to Scherzer, but I really don't know that that's how realistic that is. But I think we'll see as the market evolves. There's going to be a lot of starting options that do come onto the market.
I'll throw this out there, and I don't know if there's a good name to attach to this. You know, like the one that comes up is Jose Berrios. But is there someone on a team that's out of it or falling out of it or likely going to be out of it that you get that makes sense for not just this year but beyond, right? That is a reasonable extension candidate, all of that stuff, right? And you could give up a legit prospect for. And when I think about like how can you justify giving up a top prospect, what about, again, this is me speculating and just trying to think of rosy scenarios, but you talk about feeling good about extensions. What if you feel good that, you know what, Wilson Contreras has convinced me that he's the guy, that he, we want him as our catcher for the long term. He's earned that long term deal. Let's try and figure out what makes sense there. And Miguel Amaya is available at the trade deadline. I'm just saying that's one scenario that could make sense for the overall, not just thinking about we're all in for 2021. Forget about trying to, you know, we can't think too far into the future. I think that balances both ideas, right? It's an area of depth.
I got to jump in just on that in part, because as these guys will let you listeners know, I got to dash in a moment, so they'll be wrapping this up. But I want to push back a little bit on that conceptually, because typically teams, including the Cubs, they love to add those multi-year guys in trade. It's like, well, if I'm giving up a significant prospect like Amaya, it'd be nice to get back multiple years of control in any case, right? But what I wonder is this a year when maybe that's less compelling than it typically is? And I say that because, one, this offseason, so the Cubs have so much money coming off the books. It is going to be a loaded free agent class. Now, there's uncertainty about the CBA. Put a pin in that. But it's possible that this Cubs team, particularly with their ability to turn good pitchers into great pitchers potentially, I mean, like, I don't want to overstate it too much, but I don't know. I look at the free agent class and I'm like, oh my God, I would love to be the kid in the candy store with this instead of having a bunch of spots kind of locked down. So maybe it's less compelling for that reason. We know that they want to keep building out the farm system. So I'm reluctant to, I understand that you would, to get a multi-year guy, you're going to have to give up one of your top prospects. Little hesitation there. And then also, lastly, I don't know. I'm starting to feel like the pitching on the Cubs side is percolating up. You know, even in the starting pitching, you're starting to wonder, like, okay, yeah, this year Keegan Thompson is filling in a swing role, but maybe you'd want to give him a look next year. Maybe you want to make that available. And he's not alone. So
you're I just all wonder in if on DJ Hers, aren't you?
I mean, dude, him and Ryan Jensen throwing no hitters at an A-ball, like, poo, done, sold.
And I'll also throw this out on you, Brett. Maybe they don't need a top of the rotation starter. Maybe they just need to, maybe this bullpen is good enough and deep enough that they can ride that in October. We've seen teams do that already. Tampa Bay basically did that last October. I know it was a weird season, but we've seen teams even before that. That's what October has shown us the last few years. You have a really good
bullpen. Oh, sorry, Sahadi, I have to go. Sorry, I just assumed you made a terrible point. Okay, gotta go. Bye.
We'll let Brett go out on that. He's so shaken by my amazing point there that he just had to leave. But I don't think that's crazy either. I was thinking about that a couple days ago. We talk about this. I think more for like getting a Scherzer or anybody, like a front of the rotation guy that kind of stabilized things, is more for the regular season right now, because I know bullpens can change like that, right? It can go to hell quickly, but they have multi-inning guys. They have guys that are interesting. They have guys at AAA that I keep saying, I keep checking the box scores and I'm like, they could call that guy up and he looks like the numbers are telling me this. And when I check in with scouts, they're like, yeah, he's actually doing pretty well. He's got this, that, and the other in his arsenal. Robert Stock was pitching 4 innings the other day. So I don't know what's going on there exactly, but there's something working with the pitching. We know that. We're seeing the results at the major league level and the minor league level. Maybe there's a way that they can, if they hold where they are and get into the playoffs, that they don't need that big move to really solidify the rotation at the front end. They could do smaller moves and still say we're good enough to make a run.
Yeah, I was gonna dunk on Brett and make a similar point until he ghosted us on Zoom. But no, I definitely think you're right there. That look, Scherzer is just a unicorn. There aren't many guys out there that you trust to give you 7 innings in a playoff game anymore. That's just not how it works. They definitely have a deeper bullpen than the one they did a couple of years ago, when it felt like, you know, Jesse Chavez was like pitching every single night because Joe Maddon didn't have a lot of guys that he trusted. You know, we've written about a more contact-oriented offensive approach that I think the Cubs, you know, would not go into a playoff series against the Marlins and expect to score 1 run in 2 games again. I think that they're pretty well locked in here, and that as the game evolves, they can kind of think about this in different ways. Jed has shown, you know, he made that kind of, you know, rip the Band-Aid off move with Yu Darvish that maybe bought him some breathing room, but he kind of charted this middle path of loading up on guys on with 1 year deals and postseason experience and something to prove. And I think my only reality check was I was looking at the game notes last night, and you know, the last time the Cubs won six consecutive series, I think it'd be like a while ago, and it was 2019 before they signed Kimbrel, before they traded for Castellanos, before Darvish became like a Cy Young monster. So like, there is going to be a correction to this. Yeah. It's just a matter of how they can manage their way through the down periods and, you know, kind of remain competitive, because otherwise, you know, a lot of this is like matchups when you catch teams, but I don't know, it's hard to look at the rest of the National League and the teams that the Cubs have played and their record against the contenders and be like, oh, well, they don't have a shot in October. And maybe in late July, it looks a lot different if there are injuries and underperformances and, you know, these guys playing over their heads kind of go back to Iowa. But for now, I absolutely think you got to look at those moves around the margins, the depth pieces. I mean, even I guess Chafin was injured last year, but that was someone they traded for that, you know, made no headlines. They gave up, I don't even remember what it was. And obviously they had to re-sign him, but I mean, he looks like a great reliever for October. And that was, you know, I know you were on that name for a while, you know, they were on him, Sahade, but otherwise just kind of moves like that, that make you better because they have the star players. And I think Kyle Hendricks has started, you know, a game one playoffs before, he started a World Series game seven. Like, that's a good place to start, especially if David Ross is pushing the buttons on a bullpen that the Cubs haven't had in seemingly a long time.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's so many things. For me, it's just like, let's see where this goes. It turned so drastically in the past couple months that I just don't want to make any assumptions right now with this team. I think we were hammering them so hard, and justifiably they deserved it early on, but they've shut us all up, and they look like a team that's good enough to beat anyone. I think they're proving that now. We'll see how they come through June. I joke about Rex Brothers being a low leverage guy. How dare you say that? But he's right. The fact is that makes their bullpen really deep. He's been really solid, and guys like him and Dylan Maples can clean up bad games, and you don't waste the really really, you know, high leverage guys, and they have more in the minors. I'm curious to see how Ross can kind of put this all together. I'd really like to see what he could do without an ace in the postseason. Can he mix and match and really make it work in this new era of baseball that we're seeing? That it may go away with rule changes and whatnot. This may be one of the final opportunities to really do that. Who knows what rules come into place that put more importance in you know, having that 7-8 inning guy. But right now, you can get away with this stuff, and they're talented enough right now and showing us that the bullpen is deep enough to do some things that in a non-traditional manner and maybe win. So I say go for it. I say, let's see what they can pull off with the talent that they have. And maybe they don't need to go all in on an ace. And obviously you'd like to have, you know, Max Scherzer and Kyle Hendricks. But if you have Kyle Hendricks and a bunch of bullpen arms and some solid starters, then that works too. That's it for us. This is On to Waveland. Make sure to what's our email again, Michael? You can shout it out for us, or no, do we not have an email anymore?
It is wavelandathletic at gmail.com.
There we go. Email us there. Thanks to Brett Taylor, our normal host there. He's read his work at Bleacher Nation. Reed Patrick and I work at The Athletic. Thanks for listening, guys. We appreciate it. Take care.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.